Welcome back to the Sixth Pillar Podcast with your host, Chief Neil Gang. I'm Missy Morris, Podcast Director for Techni Innovations. Our guest today is Chief Elliot Moya, a leader in modern law enforcement with a passion for mental health regarding his officers and organizational health for his department. Chief Moya has a background in the U.S. Air Force and civilian law enforcement. He is only the sixth chief of police at the Elliott, Maine Police Department. And in 2022, Chief Moya was recognized and honored as the Maine Association Police Chief of the Year, recognized for his commitment to promoting mental health initiatives and fostering a supportive work environment. Chief Neil Gang, the floor is yours.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining us today. Welcome to the Six Pillar Podcast. As you all know, I always thank my team from Techni Innovations, our podcast director, Missy Morris, who is a retired police lieutenant with 28 years experience. So thanks again, Missy, for all you do. So I want to welcome all our listeners to the Six Pillar family, where we have unfiltered, unadulterated conversations about leadership and organizational wellness, absent of any buzzwords and BS. I think our profession is plagued with people that do that well. I'm not one of them. And I know that my brother here today, Elliot, is not one of them. What I just found out about our guest is that he was born in Brooklyn. So we may have this connection there, as I was born in Queens. So I don't think we knew that before that.
Oh.
As everybody knows, this podcast is a little bit of a faith-based journey for me. So I always share and start out with a Bible verse. And this one's really applicable to the guest we have today. It's a Bible verse out of James 4:10, and it says, "Humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up." I'm really not sure that there's another leader out there leading this profession as humble as the guest that we have today. Yeah, this gentleman, we talked about toxic leadership in the last episode with Colonel Grossman. Today, we're going to shift, and we're going to highlight someone who's doing it right, leading with their heart and compassion, Chief Elliot Moya, who oddly enough is from Elliott, Maine. So we'll have to talk a little bit about that and that connection. But I want to read a headline before we welcome Elliot to the show. And it says, "Elliot, for his work in creating a crisis intervention team and spotlighting officer wellness, the town's police chief has been named the state's chief of the year by the Maine Association of Police." Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to our show, Chief Elliot Moya. Elliot, it's great to see you. How are you?
Great to see you, and thanks for having me. I've listened to the first two, and they were phenomenal. Colonel Grossman, Chad, and Tom Rizzo, fantastic. So I'm really excited about this conversation.
Okay. Great to have you. We talk about humble leadership. And really, Elliot, I travel the country. I ran into you at the FLTSE Leadership Academy. And I just don't know if there's a better unassuming person out there who's just doing it right for the right reasons. Talk a little bit about that journey and how you got to the level you're at, and talk a little bit about what that means to you.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I stumbled into a lot of things. I guess now in hindsight was lucky. And during the time I made chief in 2016, I was just over 10 years on the job. So that's fast. So certainly there was a little bit of imposter syndrome. There was some trying to fit in with the other chiefs. I was trying to make myself kind of just fit in and figure out, navigate how I do it, until it probably took a good solid year until I realized, let me just do this my own way. Thankfully, it didn't take that long for me to figure that out. Once I did, it's been a lot more enjoyable. I feel like we're making good moves, and the moves are authentic. The moves are real. We fail a lot too, especially when it comes to wellness. We try a lot of different things and we just kind of fall flat on our faces. I always say, at least we keep trying and we keep moving forward, because as you'd probably agree, organizational wellness, wellness as a whole, I think once we grasp that as a profession is where we're going to truly see improvement.
I have to mention something that it's just a word you used, and I think a lot of people need to hear it again. And you referred it as organizational wellness. As you know, that's part of my presentation when I go around the country and speak about these things, that it's so much more than just officer wellness. There's still people out there calling it officer wellness program, and it just tends to alienate probably 2/3 of our department. So really key that we start looking at that holistically as an organizational type of initiative. So talk a little bit about how your approach with that, and talk about, did yours start out as an officer wellness program and then transition to something bigger?
So no, I guess organically, we kind of shifted into wellness after starting to look at how to improve our mental health policing for the community. So we partnered with some of our mental health programs and companies that are in the area. We started to ride along with Mobile Crisis. We started to try to really understand some of the needs that the community had as far as mental health. That whole time, I'm like, we're not even really taking a look in the mirror at ourselves. So it was kind of that moment that I morphed from mental health policing. We still do it, and it's still huge as far as the direction this department's going. But to take that look at ourselves was, I think, a phenomenal change. And then I started, from there, it was a lot of fun. A lot of it, too, was, I got to be honest, selfish. There were some times in my life, like I said, I made chief pretty quickly. Didn't quite know, how do you be a chief? I think there used to be a manual, but it really wasn't, it doesn't dig into the real problems that a chief goes through. Also, before I was chief, I thought I had all the answers. I thought I knew everything that should be happening in the corner office. Very quickly, I realized that I didn't. That in itself kind of took me on a journey of self-improvement, self-reflection. It wasn't too long after that I realized I was kind of feeling like my head was knotted. I was kind of like, wasn't thinking clearly, was getting very frustrated on the job, very frustrated as a leader, a bit of a perfectionist, right? I knew where I wanted the department to go, but I didn't necessarily feel that everybody was on the same page, which was kind of difficult for me. So I ended up going to see somebody, did a little bit of counseling. It changed my life. From that point on, it changed my life to the point where I felt it was important enough to come back to the department and tell everybody. So I told everybody, I didn't get too deep, right? Too personal, but about how good I felt after talking to this third party person that doesn't know anything about me. That was really another turning point for us where everybody started asking me, like, well, wait a minute, tell me what it's like. Asking more, who are you going to see? How did you do that? And from there, that's where we did a really, really strong shift in the conversations in this department from that point and to today have been so much deeper. We use the word wellness here every day. Every day we're trying to do something, however small. If it's protein shakes in the fridge or yoga or whatever it is, we are trying hard to make it happen. And we're a very small police department. So it could be a challenge at times.
Yeah, I think that you bring up some great points. And one of the things is about self-care. We preach it to our people. But then I always say, are the leaders taking their own advice, right? So it's one thing to tell somebody, it's one thing to lead people in the right direction to get their resources, but then are we looking in the mirror and saying, okay, maybe that's something we need to do as well. So we talked about self-care, and the one thing that's so important is the power of leaders sharing their story. So talk a little bit about that. When did you feel vulnerable doing that at first? You shared a little bit about what that outcome was, but talk to me about what that, your thought process was during that time.
Yeah. So I think I was struggling. I always felt like I was a decent leader, right? For me, it was always the officers came first. So I thought my mindset with that was right. Let's take care of our people. I learned that when I was in the military. I saw it in action when I was in the military, and I wanted to emulate that as a leader here. Again, just wanting to kind of everything to be perfect, I guess. It was a challenge. And that's where I had to realize, in fact, that what was probably the most eye-opening part and what really kind of drove me to say, all right, maybe I better have a chat with somebody else who might be able to unknot what's going on in my head was when I talked to my wife. I always go home and she's my sounding board. She's amazing. And one time I felt like the advice she gave me wasn't good enough. I never realized really that I was probably burdening her with all this stuff. I think she's actually a much better leader than I am. So she could probably see through all my nonsense. It was a moment where she was like, well, I have no more to give you. It wasn't that she didn't want to. It's just whatever she was going to say, I think she knew it wasn't going to be good enough because I was too just wrapped up in myself. And this is the way the department should go. By the way, personal life, I got two daughters. I love it. Going home is the absolute best thing, the best part of my day. But I used to go home with so much of that just heaviness and weight of how do I make this? How do I be the best? Caring too much about my reputation, maybe not wanting to get in trouble, like all these things that just, it is what it is. It's life. I think if you lead with your heart and integrity and do the right thing, those are never really going to be a problem. We will face issues here and there, but as long as you stick to some good values and do the right thing, it'll never be anything that's career ending or losing friends over. That's how I simplified it, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it was that conversation with her that made me say to myself, yeah, I got to go chat with somebody and always into self-improvement to be better. But that was a real turning point for me where I was like, I think I just made her mad. I got to do something for me, but for us. So that was it for me.
Yeah. And I think a lot of it comes down to, are we role modeling the behaviors we expect from others? I know we read that in all the leadership books out there, but are we really doing that? Then one of the questions I have to ask, which a lot of people share with me, It's about family. Like the, did you ever talk to your daughters afterwards? And they said, well, Dad, we knew that potentially you need to go talk to somebody. We knew you weren't the best version of yourself. Did that ever come to fruition afterwards, after you went out and sought help and maybe came back as a refreshed father?
My daughters, they just make me happy. But I know I still was carrying a lot. So I don't know that I ever asked the question. And that's actually pretty powerful and probably something I should do. But I think I just felt like I knew the answer. So maybe I was always being more open and explaining things a little bit more. And one of my daughters is 6. So I get to just act like a 6-year-old when I'm around her, which is fantastic. But with my 19-year-old, yeah, I think she saw probably some of the effects of me being kind of in my own way or in a bad way with it. But again, I always felt like at home, it was a kind of my safe space, kind of better, and I felt better. But like they say, right, when you get home after a hard day, maybe take 10 minutes to yourself and just kind of decompress a little bit. I think I was doing that for the most part. I just don't know if it was quite enough.
I know we continue to say that organizational wellness is a journey. It's not a destination. However, we know, and we talk to officers, and I'm sure officers have talked to you outside your organization, where our chief just has a checkbox program, right? And we don't believe in it. We don't trust in it. So talk a little bit about that process. Do you do an annual review of what's working, what's not working? What's that process? And do you have a leadership team that helps you with that?
Yeah. So wellness for us, like I mentioned before, is a constant. It's something that we are thinking about absolutely every day. Just recently, I noticed a department, and I forget where, but they're doing a program that just seems phenomenal. I want to jump on their coattails and see if we can make that happen here. But it's a constant. I don't know if I'm right or wrong. And like I said before, I've failed many times here trying to implement new things, but I'm really trying to do this in a very organic way. I didn't want to make, for instance, a wellness check, an annual wellness check. I have yet to make those mandatory, but everybody's gone. And so I'm like, well, I don't feel like I need to right now. I also am, I have to be careful that I'm trying so hard to not make it that checkbox program, because I do. I live by that word, authenticity. I want to be authentic. And I worry that if I make too much policy around it, it will then become off-putting to the officers, if that makes sense. But obviously there needs to be, right, policy around some of this stuff. I was thinking recently, okay, if I decide to move on here or retire, whatever the case may be, how do I set it up so that wellness lives on? Here in Maine, we have a police officers union, and we always negotiate that every few years. I was thinking, I haven't come up with it yet, but we're not quite there yet. It would be great to add some of that wellness stuff in there, add some incentives to it. I think we need more time off. I think we need, there's a lot of stuff I think that the officers need. So is that a way for this program to kind of live on? So that's one approach. But really here, every day, we have one officer here who's a breath coach. He's into cold water plunges. So he's kind of the guy that keeps us motivated physically. I'm probably more the guy that's, hey, take a little quiet time and breathe and meditate, things like that. And everybody else just kind of checks in wherever they feel like they fit in. So yeah, it's been very organic, I guess, in that way. I am looking to see, well, how do we get our brothers and sisters over at the fire department involved in this? And we'll see how that goes, right? Our program certainly isn't perfect, but it's in a cool place. It's in a cool place. I feel like I haven't heard anybody down talk it or say this isn't good. In fact, everybody comes back with these wellness checks, right? I'm not supposed to know anything about this stuff. What happened? Of course, right? I go first. And of course, what do I do? Oh man, this is what we talked about the whole time. You're not going to believe it. But a little bit of that is me trying to motivate everybody else and say, hey, it's okay. You're not going to get hurt there. It's easy and it's actually good. When everybody else went, it was the same thing. They'd come in and be like, hey, that was really good. This is what we went over. And I'm like, hey, you're not supposed to tell me. But we've created such a cool culture and cool vibe around wellness right now that it's just an open topic here. So I don't know that would be the same everywhere. I can imagine as a department gets bigger and you want to put in those checkbox type programs. I mean, it's better than nothing. But again, like I said, it worries me that it would be somewhat off-putting and just another policy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think there's something that I've always followed, and it sounds like you do as well. It's something called fortune favors the bold, right? It's that old saying that we have to try new things. We have to maybe try something non-traditional in law enforcement so we can reach and obtain heights we never thought possible. I think that's a lot what you bring to the table. One of the things that's really important with that is to admit our failures. That didn't work. Go back to where we were and start over or do something different. It's okay to try something and not working. The other point I think it's really important for the listeners to understand is what works in Elliott, Maine may not work in Panola, California, or whatever agencies you're working for. So trying different things, seeing what's out there, seeing who's following best practices, and then implementing some of them. And then if it doesn't work in your organization, then say, okay, it didn't work and try something different. Talk to me a little bit about, I know that just as leaders in general outside the wellness scope, that the Bible talks about you can't serve two masters. Yet as police chiefs, we serve three and four masters, right? We have their employees, we have our communities, we have to serve, and then a council we have to serve. So talk a little bit about how that works and maybe how you prioritize the people inside your organizations, because I think there's a lot to learn outside just the wellness scope of what you're doing, Elliott. A lot of people believe in your authenticity and the things that you're doing makes you a great leader, not just in the wellness space, but everything that you're doing. So I think people would like to hear about that a little bit.
Yeah, so we've done a lot of interesting things in the last few years. After when we saw that all the racial tension after George Floyd, that was a point in leadership that even in Elliott, Maine, right, we're 7,000 people and predominantly white, right, the state of Maine and also Elliott. We were entering a time where I was concerned that maybe the officers didn't know what they didn't know. Not that they were bad or nothing like that, but we were starting to hear new terms and new things that were coming in. And I didn't want them to get caught out there not knowing. Just, I feel like we, in police work, we need to be a little bit more intelligent, right? If something new, a new concept comes up, and I'm not saying we're not, if a new concept comes up, let's dive into it, right? Let's make sure that we're prepared so that we can debate it or talk about it respectfully on a traffic stop or at the local coffee shop. So we started working with a faith-based group here in town that basically just to go over race. And those types of issues that surround policing and race, it was probably one of the most powerful moments, really stretches of time where we were doing sessions with this faith-based group where we learned a lot about ourselves. We learned it was a really kind of a good time for growth. And again, I always say between wellness, the conversations we had, the conversations today are deeper here. It's not unlike it's ever been. And I've been here for 17 years now. It is pretty cool to come in here and have a conversation. It's not going to be what you think. It's, yeah, there's our tactical conversations and there's our conversations about guns and all that stuff too, but also so much about just looking inward and how we become better by doing that. When I became chief, I had my vision of what the core values should be and how we should police. We were policing, it's not bad mouthing, it's just a different style, but we were policing in a way, it was like, let's get as many arrests as we can and that makes us a good department. But then we started to realize, well, does that make us a good department? Are we just kind of going after the number as opposed to offering help, having a conversation? Everybody loves it when they make an arrest and the person they've arrested says, thank you. And it's funny, it was Simon Sinek. And I think you've mentioned Simon Sinek a few times in the past. Just listening to some of the stuff he says, I always say, if I was a smart, articulate guy, I'd be saying what he's saying to simplify that mission statement, the difference kind of between policing and law enforcement, just phenomenal stuff. It feels really good when I hear him speak now, because it was kind of along the same lines. I didn't realize I was kind of moving in that direction, if that makes sense.
No, it definitely makes sense. I go around and I speak about the fact that it's great that we traditionally have listened to other police chiefs, militaristic type of leaders. There's value in that, but there's also value in shifting our focus a little bit to the Simon Sinek's, the Bob Chapman's, people out there that are doing the corporate world, because I do think running a police department is much more like a CEO of a business now in 2024 than ever it has been running a militaristic operation. It's just not the same anymore. Policing has shifted. So for us to learn those concepts, it is super important for us to look outside the scope of just our profession to find good leaders and then implement some of those things. Like you said, the Simon Sinek's, the Bob Chapman's, who talk about truly human leadership, where leaders have to lead with the heart, compassion, and empathy. And I think that's what you bring to the table. And I think that's what resonates with people and why people think that Elliott Moya is a great police chief. And that's the reason why I wanted to have you on, because you do represent that. You do represent that change. But we get so caught up in these toxic leadership conversations, because that's really what we're seeing around the country. But then having a platform for someone like you, for other people to hear what you're doing and learn from you, was really, really important to me. That's the reason why I invited you to come on.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, but I also got to, every now and then I got to Google Chief Gang and see what he's up to, because I know it's something good that I can try to bring over here. But that's important, right? for people, those of us that are like-minded, to connect and to see what we're doing. We certainly can get ideas from one another, from even from the West Coast to the East Coast. I came up with something and I was like, well, I'm sure I didn't come up with this. I'm sure it's out there, but how do I ingrain wellness into our department? And one of the things was, and we're kind of in the process of doing this now, is every officer goes through field training, right? Whatever program or department follows. But now, and actually we use the ASHER model kind of as a, every week at the end of a work cycle, the field training officer will discuss a portion of wellness. Absolutely has to happen. And my thought around that is whether the topic for that week is financial stability or some of the programs that the municipality has available, hear about it, know it, whether it's the spirituality, right? Which is different for everybody. But if you can just talk about the impact that that has on the work we do, on the people, on our fellow brothers and sisters, so that there's a power to that. So talking to some of the FTOs here, they're like, yeah, I think that'll work. Then what we want to do then is do that for 7-8 weeks and then have the new officer come up with 3 topics and kind of vice versa. Then teach us some of what are these ideas. For me, I feel like that'll be getting some of that new way of thinking, something that we might be missing, that a new officer, maybe a younger from a different generation, right, has amazing ideas that are just going right over my head. But I think it's so important to stay connected, learn from one another, and eventually I think this'll catch on.
Yeah. I continue to say that I think it's our job now is to, without taking a cliche from the Trump camp, of making police great again, because we do get away from that. But I think it's going to take great leaders with compassion, empathy, that know how to actively listen and can engage a workforce and create that culture. Now, I've had a quota for every time someone used culture over the last 2 years, I'd probably be rich. And now it seems to be the buzzword, but it's really what's necessary, right? Creating that culture. That's what you said. You talk about wellness every single day. So for the leaders that are sitting there now, why don't you take a tangible takeaway from Chief Boya? Talk a little bit about like some of the components of your program. So maybe somebody out there who doesn't have a wellness program can go, okay, I think that's tangible. I think that I take that away and potentially I can bring this forward to my organization. So talk a little bit about that. Do you have an on-duty workout program? Do you have meal prep company? Talk a little bit about some of the tangible takeaways of your program.
So I come from the perspective of a very small department. And also we used to have a mindset of like, we don't have the budget. It's going to be impossible. We can't do these great things that all these other departments are doing. That's so untrue. But we might have to think a little bit more creatively. So for all those chiefs or any leader within the department at any level, start to think creatively. So for instance, we didn't have the space for a gym. The first thing I want to do is, hey, I want everybody to work out on duty, take a little bit, right? That seemed like the easy first step. So we partnered with the schools. The school had a gym. Great. Now they gave us 24/7 access to the school. We were able to not only go in there and kind of learn the school and the hallways a little bit, but also get a little bit of a workout. Radio still works. After a while, we then were able to open up a little space in our PD. And we have a little bit of gym equipment here now, which is kind of cool enough to, you know, get the frustrations out or just get in. If you miss going to the gym, you can pick up and do something here. We've done basically taking out all the junk food. At my house, we got one of those Walmart shoe holders for a bunch of shoes and we fill it with snacks, right? Which for our little one. And we just did the same thing here, right? So now we've got some protein bars, right? We've got some nuts, some things that'll, especially for the midnight shift where there's not much going on, not many good choices. Can they take something where they can just fuel up and it could be just enough to carry them over before they can get to a decent, healthy meal? I always talk about the wellness checks. I feel like this department did a very good job accepting that. I hear about it in other places and I get mixed reviews. I think that is a very good step to be able to kind of reflect and say, okay, did I like this? And could I talk to someone some more? And that I think is growth. So those are some of the things. Again, I had mentioned the FTO, adding that. And then that program that I thought I read recently was a sabbatical, right? So my wife is in corporate America. She does the sabbatical. And I was like, that's amazing. I was like, I'd love that. Are you kidding me? Who shouldn't have that but police officers? And I remember, and shame on me, but I remember bringing the idea up amongst a group of colleagues, peers, let's say, and I got laughed at. I kind of kicked myself because I got laughed at and just kind of put the idea to the side. But when I read that another PD is doing it, I was like, yes, That's awesome. And it is a good idea. I shouldn't have doubted myself. But those are some of the challenges. We've got to get innovative. You never know. You never know what it's going to be that catches somebody. So I also think if you have somebody who kind of lags on the wellness program, they're not negative on it. They're not down on it, but they don't like to work out. That's not their thing. Or they don't like to lift weights. Find what it is. Try to do something different and use that so that everybody gets out of their comfort zone, maybe does something together, get the families together. Whether it's one of our officers wants to cross-country ski as a group. Like, that's great. Some people haven't done it. I don't love the snow, but I'm here in Maine, so I might as well get used to it and start to enjoy it. I had a department meeting once, and this is going back now. We had a department meeting. I didn't really have much to cover, but I had a yoga instructor show up, right? And so next thing, we're clearing out all the desks, and I'm like, yeah, we're doing this. We're doing this. So it turns out one of the guys was already doing yoga. We learned so much. And then, of course, we had the one guy who was taking pictures of us to make fun of us later. But that kind of continued on to create a connection in town here. They had a place that was doing yoga for first responders and veterans. And we kept going to that for a while, which was great. So you just never know. Just again, going back, I know policy is important. I know that a lot, for many reasons, we have to have policy, liability, and all that stuff. But go easy on it and don't overthink it. For the longest time, I was overthinking this. This has to be some grandiose program and we have to have the best of the best. And it just doesn't have to be that at all. Even with that, I think we've seen a lot of great things. The gentleman, the officer that we have here, he always puts together a kind of a motivational board, right? Just a little whiteboard. I think right now it says, "No ego, we go." And it's got a bunch of words on it just to kind of, if you read it, it motivates you. And I was like, you know, you may not think it does, but it's in a place in the patrol room where you can absolutely see it every time. I feel like every time I look at it, I notice a different word or I read a different word and they're all positive. And it's kind of seeping in your mind. So we do have to immerse ourselves in the goodness.
Yeah, I think it's great. I think there's some tangible takeaways there. And one of the things I think a lot of people get caught up in, especially when you get to the executive level, is budget. What can we do with the budget? Well, we have a small budget as well compared to other places out in California. But again, it's not restricted to budget. I mean, you could do other things. You could partner with a meal prep company. It doesn't cost you a cent. They bring it in. You have a QR code. Now your employees are buying food directly from the company. It didn't cost us anything except for refrigerator space, right? And I laughed a little bit. I don't know if the audience heard me, but when you talked about people laughing at you about ideas, well, sabbaticals is becoming something that's part of the normal conversation moving forward. Well, I got laughed at when we designed something called the Zen Den, where people can go and decompress. There's a massage chair in there. There's crystals in there. There's calming aromatherapy. Now we're starting to find out, which we talked about the last session with Colonel Grossman, sleep deprivation. So it's now a restorative sleep program. So there's some people out there that just can't get their mind wrapped around the fact that we're providing an opportunity for people to sleep on duty. Well, think back, listener, for a minute. Your people are sleeping on duty. Let me give you a hint. It may not be in your organization and you may not want to admit that they are, but they're behind the churches or they're behind the shopping centers and they're catching some time to sleep. We're not nocturnal. It's part of life, and sleep deprivation is a big issue in our profession that no one's really speaking about. I don't know if there's something that you've addressed with sleep deprivation, or is that something maybe potentially on the radar coming up? Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So again, just in that, going down that path of self-improvement, one of our officers told me about a wearable, which I think Colonel Grossman had talked about some of these wearables. So I bought one, I'm using it, and I'm looking at it. I realized that I'm using it mostly for sleep, right? It kind of tells you how you're sleeping, deep sleep, how many hours, what you should be getting. It's got links to a lot of podcasts and information. So you can kind of, again, immerse yourself in that information. So sleep has been an incredibly big conversation here. And I found it just so timely that in the last podcast where you were talking about that with Colonel Grossman, it's everybody here now is, some of the latest conversation was, oh, I only got 6 hours last night, but it wasn't even. So we're starting to actually look at that and realize when we do get that 8 hours, we do feel a little bit better. We do feel a little more well-rested and things go a little smoother. In fact, when somebody says, I only got 4 hours, well, we know that maybe we can step up a little bit, help them out, as opposed to it's going to be potentially a tough day for them, right? So the midnight shift, right? That is one of the biggest things, I think, that like you said. I mean, that's just a tough one. I'm trying to look at some ways now and how we can improve that. We just don't have the staffing, because I think a restorative rest program, a policy for that, I think is phenomenal. It makes total sense. I know that you were alluding to, there's probably some leaders out there that are saying, are you kidding me? Don't we want the best out of our people? And we need to be trying to provide the best, whatever that is. So being able to do that, I just, thankfully, hopefully next fiscal year, we are going to see some more officers. So the more officers we get, I'm just looking forward to see, okay, how much more can we do? Not only that, but people are starting to ask, like, what is it that you guys, little Elliott PD, you guys are up to? What? This, that? And it's attractive to them. Yeah, okay, let's see where we can go.
Well, I think that you were going down a path, and I'm glad you stopped for a moment, because I think it talks about what I call the biggest lie in policing is recruitment and retention issues are our biggest issue. It's not. It's leadership. It's leading for different generations. It's toxic leadership. When you ask the leaders, it's recruitment and retention. If you ask the people on the ground, like the FOP did a survey, they'll tell you it's about leadership and organizational betrayal. It's about lack of support from admin. So it's really important to understand those type of things that we may need to get ourselves out of the way so we can make growth happen. Now, we talked a little bit about recruitment and retention, and I think that is really important for particularly organizations that are doing really well, like yourself, when it comes to organizational wellness, to share that in their recruitment process. Have you done that at all? Have you changed your flyers? Have you potentially shared some of the great things you're doing? Because if we know that's what Gen Zs are looking for, we know that we have to change our professions traditionally to meet the new and coming workforce, then why not change how we recruit? And I think that wellness is a really strong strategy to help us with recruitment. And the other thing we have to remember is that retention, a good retention program, is always the best strategy for recruitment as well. So talk a little bit about that. I don't know if you've had to deal with that up in Elliott.
Yeah. So yeah, we still have an open position. We're in the process now where we've gotten together and we're trying to say, okay, what should the flyer say now? Right. It's because we do want it to look different. I remember telling the sergeant here, I'm like, why do people even put flyers out? They all say the same thing. Like it's very little that changes from department to department, at least here in Southern Maine. Okay, maybe one department's a little bit bigger. Yeah, obviously budgets, things like that. But usually that's not the stuff that, except for maybe the size and potential positions that they can have. It's not usually what a new officer's looking for. They're looking at the hourly rate or just to get on the job. And then all that seems to come down the road a little bit once they kind of get settled and really get to know and learn the profession and the what comes with it. But it was frustrating to see. I was like, we could take any of these and interchange the police department name, change out the cruiser on the flyer. And it is saying the same thing. So we're in the process. We haven't created the flyer yet because we're in the process of figuring out what we want to do for a schedule, figuring out how we can make it better. All of this with wellness on the forefront. We really want to just, it's funny that you say it because we really wanted to put something that just looks different. If we can create it and it's captivating enough with a good focus on wellness, I would imagine we're going to end up getting the people that we're looking for.
Very good. I want to applaud for your approach with that because it is about making you different. And Elliott, Maine is different than another organization. So we have to separate ourselves out, right? I know this is a little strange, but I always use the quote by Dr. Seuss, right? Why fit in when we were born to stand out? And that's what we want to do now, right? Everybody's recruiting, everybody's hiring. So why not share your wellness initiatives? It's because that's what the Gen Zs are looking for. We know that. I've talked to a social scientist. They want work-life balance. They want to know that they're valued. They want to know their voice is going to be heard over the next 3 to 5 years, not, hey, we don't want to see you or hear you or put in for anything until you've been here 5 years. So really important to share that. Let's take away the black and blue color scheme with our cruiser on it. Let's take away the black male, the white female, and all those people put into a picture just to show how diverse we are. Those don't work, right?
Right.
Let's change our recruitments. So let's look at the things that we're doing well and share what stands out and makes us different. And for Elliott, Maine, it's the difference is the wellness program. And I would imagine people are applying to your organization just because of those wellness initiatives you bring forward. So I encourage people out there that are doing great things, make sure that makes it to the recruitment flyer so people understand all the great things that you're doing out there. And here's the other tip that I've learned. If your flyer doesn't have a QR code on it, they're moving right on to the next person. It's that simple, right? Just adding a QR code. So we created the new flyer. I'll be more than happy to send it to you, Elliott, if you ever want to take a look at it. It talks about, are you the difference maker? Or are you the puzzle piece we're looking for? We talk about on-duty workouts. We talk about work-life balance. We talk about meal prep company. So we talk about all those things in our flyer, and there's no pictures of our police car. There's no pictures of our SWAT teams blowing up. The one time we did an explosive or a breach, but those things aren't on there anymore. So really important that we start to strategize that way. I know we have a few more minutes, and I want to talk about something that's really been a little frustrating for me lately. It's this concept, and I don't want people to get the wrong idea, but this saying that it's okay to not be okay. No, I get that. We've been saying that since 2018, 2019. I just went to a gala not too long ago where the keynote speaker mentioned it 6 times in a matter of 3 minutes, and everybody was looking like they just saw fire for the first time. But we've been saying the same things. We need to kind of change how we're doing things, change our approaches. Here's something. How about we put a positive spin on it, where it's actually okay to be okay? Right? How about that? How about it's okay to be okay? I don't think we need to limp out of this profession. We can actually walk out, right? And don't wait for your organization to make sure that you're mentally healthy. Make sure that you do that for yourself. Do it for your family. Do it for yourself. Set up annual wellness checks if your organization is not going to do that. Go to wellness retreats, the chief wellness retreat that I spoke about not too long ago. Practice meditation, yoga, proactive sleep strategies, all those type things. Don't wait for someone else to make sure you're mentally healthy. I can tell you right now, people, that we can walk out here and we can be okay. Again, it's okay to be okay. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on that.
I love that. And I go back to the board that we have in the patrol room. I'll look at some of those words and they're just they're positive. So like I said, I'll walk out of there and I have this motivational word that just kind of, so it kind of just changes your direction a little bit. So even the changing that it's okay to be okay, I think there's some power that makes sense. And it also, I think, gives it a little bit of teeth in the way that we're here to help you. It's sending the same message, maybe even in a better way. Hey, what do you need? That's our focus. That's our goal. We want to put the best out there. So be okay. How do I help you to be okay? So yeah, I love that. I think that's great. But yeah, besides that, I don't know what else to say on that.
Again, it's just a different spin. It's a different perspective. It helps us look through a different lens that we can actually walk out of this profession okay if we do the things and put things in place. Certainly physically, we typically do that, but mentally, we typically don't. And if you're sitting back and you're angry with your organization, you're angry with your leadership, I understand that. And I don't say stop, right? Continue to have push and make change in your organization. However, don't rely on your organization to make sure you're mentally healthy when you leave this profession. Because here's the bottom line is your family deserves it and you deserve it. Don't leave it up to others to make sure that you're healthy. As we close out here, typically I talk about toxic leadership and poor leaders around the country, but I'm so glad we had an opportunity to actually highlight somebody who's walking the walk and doing the right things, who's authentic, who's caring and leads with his heart. Chief Elliot Moya, what message do you have for other leaders stepping into these leadership roles, particularly the next generation of police chiefs who have to shepherd this profession forward?
I think every chief out there needs to do a little self-reflection. And if you are that, right, as they say, the old school chief that doesn't buy into this stuff, then hey, still be the chief, but step aside and let somebody from the middle figure this out. Just give them the okay to say, yep, go after it. Go ahead and do it. It's more than, it's been a difference maker here. Again, I always say we're just a small little department. I don't know if that makes it harder or if that makes it easier, but there has been a positive impact. So just embrace it. I think it's going to make it much easier. Again, you think about a supervisor showing up in the middle of the night and somebody's in patrol with their feet kicked up and they're snoring. Well, imagine having that policy where, hey, the road's covered, we got it, go ahead and rest. I mean, that life gets in the way. I don't know, maybe work gets in the way of life. I don't know, but we have kids, we have families. That's so important. Some days we're going to show up and be tired. So instead of looking to discipline, which I've realized so many different ways now, you know, one of the things actually recently I talked about was, hey, we look at somebody kind of violates a policy. Typically, it's like, oh, they violated the policy. Write them up or how are we going to do this, retrain, whatever it is. But for us here, I think the first question is, okay, is the policy still relevant or is what they did actually make more sense? Let's look at it that way at first, not the punitive, you're in trouble. Now, granted, there's some egregious stuff out there you can't overlook. I'm not saying that, but you know, how do we actually look at it by looking at our people first and saying, hey, even in this situation, we're taking care of you. There was a disciplinary situation. It wasn't a disciplinary, but it was kind of going down that road. And the officer was fantastic. Doesn't mind me sharing the story. Says, I haven't been to therapy in a while. I'd be willing to go back and just check in with you. I know I'll be, and give me whatever it is I deserve. I said, you do that and you just give me a thumbs up that you did it and we're good. And it's a very different way of thinking, I know. but it's effective and you get some really good buy-in, and then you just get that support that's really needed, I think, right? And you really start to work towards that brother sisterhood that this profession is supposed to be.
Yeah, I agree. So, I think that we're just looking at correct behavior, right? We're looking to change behavior and whatever means yeah. that we could do that. So before I do a closing statement here, how can people reach out to you? Give us an email, maybe a LinkedIn, that people could reach out to you and maybe hear a little bit more from you, and you can help people along this journey.
Yeah. So yeah, a couple of things I want to just mention. So in the last couple of years, we've also hosted a wellness conference where we've had speakers come in and have attracted people from New England to come to Maine and sit here with us. We had one of them, we had a comedian come in. We had families come in. Really powerful conferences, different than the stuff that you go to and you kind of learn. We've had some emotion flying on some of them. We had a peer support team doing some of the sessions. It was just incredible. So we're looking to do that again in 2025. It was a lot of work for us to do in our department through our association. So we've partnered with Dirigo Safety, who is in Maine. They do a lot of our training and stuff like that. And phenomenal little company that's going to help us kind of market this more and get it out there a little more for not only Maine, but right, whoever else, New England or beyond. So I think that's important because we always have a good time and we always end up hearing that we've helped a couple of people as a result of that. And I think that's key. But other than that, yeah, I'm on LinkedIn, Elliot Moya. Please connect with me. Sometimes I get blocked and I can't think of these great ideas, and I know they're out there. I know there's a lot of us out there that are thinking along the same lines, that are coming up with some great stuff to make this profession better. I want to hear it.
Well, thank you so much. Let us know when you have the dates in 2025. We'll make sure we push that out and advertise it for you. I think you're doing great work. I'll tell our listeners that join our Six Pillar Podcast family by following us on your favorite podcast platform. I would say that one person could change the world. Mother Teresa, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Chief Elliot Moya. They can change the entire world. Don't think you can't sit back and change the culture of your organization, because you can. It takes some wherewithal, it takes some strategy, but definitely don't give up. And I'll say, until next time, stay safe, healthy, and resilient, and God bless. Thank you very much.
We extend our gratitude to Chief Neil Geng for his leading us through this exploration of wellness and leadership for our extraordinary first responders. This is Missy Morris signing off on behalf of Techne Innovations. Be safe. And we look forward to having you with us again on the Sixth Pillar Monthly Podcast.